the audit committee, Auditor General. We are convened for a specific reason to receive the report from the annual financials as they are reflected in terms of the annual report from the Auditor General. As the committee, our main purpose is to interact with that report and mainly for the beginning of the meeting for a few minutes. We have allowed that the audit committee should be with us because they are having a responsibility to look and certify in the main the financial statements for the final audit which today is presented to the committee. So would mainly want from them a few things. One of those is a brief outlook of the areas that they think are of a nature that they could present to us, if there are any, in terms of the stability in as far as the actual performance of the Office of the Auditor General. And if need be, any other thing that they think that the committee must know before we could allow the Auditor General in. That won't take us more than 7-8 minutes. So we thought, let's allow that process. But before that, for introductory purposes, it's the first time for us to meet the Office of the Auditor General Audit Committee, and it looks like today we're meeting only the chairperson of the audit committee. I would give over to him for the introductions and any apology from his part, if there are any apologies. Over to you, sir. Do I be on record, just to be on record, yes, Mike.
I repeat, thank you, Chair, honourable members. My name is John Beesman-Simmons. I'm the chairman of the Audit Committee. We have four members on the Audit Committee. Unfortunately, the other three members all had commitments in their diaries and not able to come down. From Gauteng, I'm Cape-based, so it's a lot easier for me. Quick Uber ride as opposed to a flight, fortunately. But if I could record their apologies, Chair, their names are on in the presentation, so for the secretariat, they can get the names from there if that's in order, Chair. Maybe at the outset, before I get into the detail, Chair, I am a chartered accountant. Without boasting, I qualified back in 1981. So I would, as I say, not boasting, I would just say that I have a lot of experience. I've served on probably more than 10 audit committees. So as an overview, I just want to say that the Auditor General of South Africa is one of the most impressive organizations that I've ever been involved with. They certainly have had clean audit reports for many, many years, and since the inception of the Audit Committee, and it's seldom that there are any significant areas. So I just want to give that as an overview. I can also say when I first got involved, there were very few chartered accountants in the employment of the Auditor General. There are now over 600 chartered accountants in their office doing audits, and to me that is a remarkable statistic. And within the context of transformation of in South Africa, the vast majority of those are black people. I think that's an unbelievable achievement within the office, and I would compliment them greatly on that fact. When we, in terms of the formal presentation, Chair, the purpose and mandate of the committee set out on the screen, but in short, compliance with the Public Audit Act and compliance with the King Code of Corporate Governance, which is now the fourth iteration of the reports from the King Commission. And certainly they do comply with both of those important documents. The mandate is really, it's an oversight committee. All four members of the committee are non-executive. We're all independent of the Auditor General of South Africa. We are not employed by them, and we meet at least three times a year. Plus, we do attend training that the AGSA puts. We attend a workshop at least once every year, and they give us updates on IFRS, which is International Financial Reporting Standards.
I take that would be part of your report. Yeah, but I take it the elements of what you're saying will be part of your report. But our interest now, before we get the report, the AG must get in and be part of that reporting period. But what we thought we should give you an opportunity is that as the audit committee, there might be a situation where you think that you would want to take this committee, you see, on board on such areas which would affect your client, what is it, your institution, at the level of sensitivity, such that they won't be allowed to be part of such engagement. If there are any, here we are. I would want to hear that. If nothing of the sort, we would be pleased to invite the Auditor General and his team to get in. But we must allow you that a period as the independent a part of that institution.
Thank you, Chair. Perhaps I could just refer to our overall conclusion that we express in the report of the Audit Committee, that we do meet with both the internal and external auditors of AGSA without management present. We want to get an assurance from them that there's no pressure put on them to suppress any findings. And both of those audit firms have confirmed that is the case. There can be robust debate on points, but absolutely they say that no undue pressure is brought upon them. The overall conclusion is that the internal controls and risk management of the office are largely adequate and effective, which is very much in line with my introductory comments. They do say largely, and that is, like many organizations, internal controls around information technology are often a very difficult area. they've defined it as a medium risk as opposed to a critical risk. So that's an area that AGSA is focusing on. They have increased within the last year and a half, they've increased their capacity in that area, and we do not see it as I say, it's not a critical area. We don't believe that they are exposed to undue risk.
Okay.
And that would be my overall comments. And I'm very happy to take questions from yourself or honourable members of your committee, Chair.
No, fine. Honourable members, as indicated, that we have allowed the audit committee to have a few minutes with us with the intention of providing an opportunity to share with us any sensitive areas that they think there will be a bit hamstrung to raise them in the presence of the Auditor General and his team. It looks like here they are. They are happy. There are no areas that they would want to raise with us. They are happy to have all the areas in terms of their own report in presence of the Auditor General, which is something which I think, from my side, I remain happy with, and I hope from your side, if there are any comments before we allow the Auditor General in. That's what we could probably deal with. Honourable Peter.
Thanks, Chair. I think I'm happy. It's just that to maybe convey a bit of discomfort from other members who, you know, when we are to meet them in such a very important process, and they decide not to, or whatever, for whatever reasons, they don't pitch up or send an apology, just to convey that message.
Chair, may I respond, or does that not need a response?
The fact that our expectation was to receive the entirety, of the membership of the audit committee. This is a very important platform for them. It's not that forum that would get into every time, sometime in the year. It's afforded only at this time. I think the disappointment that we have is that the members of the field committee they saw it fit to be absent in this very important platform.
Chair, I shall certainly convey that to the members of the committee. I would say that historically, over the years, it's always been the practice that at least one committee member attends, and very often that was solely the chair, who's Gauteng based, and I would normally attend just by virtue of the fact that I live here in the Cape. But I hear what you say, and I respect that, and we shall certainly convey that to the other committee members.
Okay. Thank you so much. Okay, can we then allow the Auditor General to come in and his team? Thank you very much, sir. Colleagues? Mr. Salingab, allow the Auditor General and his team at this side. Please. That one is open. What is happening? What she's done? We're trying to sort the this thing, the air condition. It's drowning us like anything. It's warm here. Peter Paul? Let's welcome the Auditor General and his team. They have joined us now after we had a brief session with a representative of the audit committee. We had that opportunity for the audit committee to give a few highlights to us for the intention of giving us whether there are any things that they think they would provide as information in absence of the Office of the Auditor General. Yes, indeed, through that opportunity, they have expressed their happiness working in that environment. They are pleased that at all times they would have sessions with both the internal auditors and the external auditors, and the matters would be touched at that level. So they are happy with that situation. The only area that we have raised from our part is the fact that we have only one member of the audit committee as part of this meeting. We think that this is a very important forum which is availed to them at least only once when they table the annual report, and therefore it would have been good to have a full contingent of such a team, or rather a majority of such a team. Though we remain happy for the fact that indeed the environment as expressed is the normal acceptable environment. So welcome AG and your team. We would allow, as per the agenda of the meeting, that there are matters that the audit committee would give us a full briefing on in your presence, which are matters that need our consideration generally, and be able to dispense with such and allow yourself and your team to give a full brief in terms of the annual report. Over to you, sir.
Thank you, Chair. Up on the screen, and I believe that you all have a copy of the document, honourable members. The agenda is...
We have these, sir.
Yeah.
Okay.
Is set out on page 2, Chair, and just to run through it very quickly, the purpose and mandate, the composition of the committee and the members, an overview of our activities, and then our key focus areas of critical importance is that we, while we engage on a an operational level with the DAG as the accounting officer of AGSA, in essence we report to your committee, Chair, the Standing Committee on of the Auditor General, and thank you for this opportunity to attend and give our feedback to you. Like any audit committee, one of the key functions is to provide an oversight of the in particular the external audit function, that is where they give their audit reports, independent audit report on the annual financial statements, and then also on the integrated annual report. We oversee the internal audit function. And I'll get into some detail on that as we go through it. Also, external audit, as I've mentioned, risk management, the adequacy and the effectiveness of internal controls, which I referred to earlier when the members of the executive committee that are here today were not present, the assessment of the finance function and chief financial officer, and a lot of those things are set out in the King report of and the King code of corporate governance, and then overall conclusions and recommendations. Chair, I don't propose to go through every slide in detail. There are some that I can't take them as read because the committee haven't had them with the opportunity to review them at this stage, but they obviously will have the document for review. We operate in terms of the Public Audit Act, which, as I'm sure committee members know, has been amended. I think it was the first amendment of the Act, which the President signed late last year. And the regulations were then finalized, if I recall, by the end of March, I think it was. I've referred to the King Code. The mandate of our committee is to fulfill our duties in terms of the Act and the terms of reference that we have, and to provide assistance to the Deputy Auditor General in fulfilling her responsibilities. The composition and members, in terms of the original Public Audit Act, we were appointed by the DAG. That has been amended, and the committee members are now appointed by the AG, which we welcome. It increases the independence of members, and it also means that the DAG, who's the accounting officer, cannot, for example, dismiss a member because she thinks that they potentially would expose her. If I draw a parallel in terms of the Companies Act, audit committee members are appointed by the shareholders of a company as opposed to the board of directors. So our appointment is now a level up from the accounting officer of the organization. I'm not going to go through the members because that's not critical to the session. The details are recorded, and we have some very, very well qualified members on the committee. An overview of our activities set out on pages 5 and 6. Every year we review the internal audit charter. We review the audit of predetermined objectives and the integrated annual report, which includes the annual financial statements. As I mentioned, we are responsible for the appointment of the internal auditors. We look at our own terms of reference, and I might add that this year we amended those for areas that needed to be dealt with in terms of the amendments to the Public Audit Act. We do spend quite a lot of time focusing on the risks within the organization. And if I might emphasize, Chair, that as I said in some of my comments when the AG, DAG and their team were not here, the risk management within this organization is by far the best I've seen of any of the audit committees that I sit on. And I think that's something of which they can be very proud. They do want to lead by example, and they, in my opinion, certainly do that. Clearly, we review the annual financial statements, and we are pleased. We've been campaigning, not campaigning, that's the wrong word. We have been requesting the AGSA to implement a whistleblowing function, and that was implemented during the year. They've started out with implementing it on an internal basis, but they will be rolling it out to the public, if I understand correctly, within the next year. And I see the DAG nodding, which is obviously great. Key focus areas, there are a number of pages in our report that deal with that. About this time last year, we met with your predecessors of SCOAC to present our report, and we monitored the progress of the external auditors in terms of the transformation of their organization. If I can just deviate from the slides, and for those committee members who may not be aware, a firm of external auditors has to be absolutely independent of their clients. The vast majority of the large and medium-sized firms and black-owned firms that operate here in South Africa are used by the Auditor General. They contract work out to them, and consequently none of them may be appointed as external auditors. That makes our position as an audit committee very, very difficult to find firms that are transformed in terms of the imperative for that in South Africa. The only firm that met our criteria for appointment, with the exception of transformation, was the firm Crowe Johannesburg. They, despite our goal of wanting to appoint, and this was a mandate that we received from SCOAC, to appoint a firm that was at least 50% black-owned and 30% black females, Crowe are nowhere close to that. And as you can see, they had a triple BEE scorecard of level 7 last year. We went through a tender process. We reissued the tender 4 times, Chair, before we actually found a firm that we believed was capable of doing the audit. Sadly, seriously, low down in terms of broad-based black economic empowerment at level 7. We got a commitment from them that we reported to SCOAG last year that they would implement measures to get them up to at least a level 4, and they've committed further that within the next 2 years they will get to level 3, and will continue to focus on that. They certainly, our experience with them is that they are a good firm. They're small to medium sized, but as I explained, getting a larger firm or you know, most of the big 4 firms, I think I'm correct in saying, are all level 1, and most of the black firms are also level 1 in terms of their scorecards, but just not available for appointment because of their lack of independence. In terms of our evaluation of the financial statements and the integrated annual report, and as I refer to those, I may, if I may, use acronyms AFS and IAR. Going concern is a critical thing for external auditors, and therefore for us and our oversight function, to be comfortable that the organisation will have the resources to meet its financial commitments, and there's a long checklist that is reviewed in that context, and the Chief Financial Officer does a very, very good job in terms of setting out a letter addressed to us, which certainly indicates that AGSA is a going concern. So I would say to the committee that we have high confidence in that, which is always a good thing to have as an audit committee. It's actually an essential thing, because if an organization is not a going concern, they will have a modified audit report in that respect. We review unusual transactions and where there are judgments. An example of that, a very prime example, is the provision for bad debts, and we will talk to that a little bit later. We review the accounting policies and any changes, and indeed there have been some quite significant changes in terms of IFRS, the International Standards on Financial Reporting, and obviously, internal financial controls, which I referred to before the AG and his team joined us. Moving down to the bottom point, Chair, auditors always present, well, the DAG presents a or signs a letter called a management representation letter to the external auditors, and that is a couple of pages, but in essence what it says is that the office has given the external auditors access to all the records, and that any information that that she and her team have has been relevant to the annual financial statements have been fully disclosed to them. Attached to that is what is colloquially termed overs and unders schedule, and that is items where the auditors, perhaps on a judgment call or in actual fact, may pick up that they think potentially could be adjusted, but they are immaterial, and to adjust them in the financial statements sets the process back, and they say they're not material and they accept them. That is standard on any external audit thing, and really is of no concern to us. We do work through them, and we will question certain items, but rest assured, Chair, we are satisfied that they are not material and did not need adjustment. On to page 9, I've referred to the management rep letter and the overs and unders, etc. And our ultimate conclusion as the Audit Committee Chair is to recommend to the DAG that she may sign the integrated annual report in the AFS, and obviously submit them to Parliament, and that we did with a high level of confidence, Chair. In terms of internal audit as opposed to external audit, I overlooked just to remind you and your committee that external auditors are appointed by this committee, by, when I say this, not the Audit Committee, by SCOAC, and that ensures further the independence of the external audit. Internal audits, as I'm sure you're all well aware, can actually be employees of an organization. The same level of independence is not a requirement of any legislation or international and or South African standards, and their appointment is falls under the audit committee. We review their internal audit strategy. They present a report to us on a rolling basis of 3 years. So it's set out. They don't review every area in 1 year. That would be a huge task and would also entail a very significant cost. Where there are critical areas, they do review those and do an internal audit of those areas on an annual basis, but there are some areas that are only done every 3 years, and obviously also every second year if they are of a intermediate risk. We review that overall strategy. We also review the plan on an annual basis, and that will include their audit fee budget and the terms of engagement. Again, every year we review their internal audit charter. So just to emphasize, our terms of reference as an audit committee, the external audit terms of reference charter and the internal audit are reviewed every year to make sure that they remain focused and relevant to the oversight process of AGSA. We do, I said earlier that they are not subject to the same independence rules and regulations and legal situations as like the external audit. We do, however, review their independence to make sure that that they are able to perform the internal audits without bias. I must emphasize that internal, as I said, they can be employees of the organization. AGSA has decided to outsource that function, and the committee need to be aware that typically and certainly since the Public Audit Act was promulgated, all the internal auditors that have served AGSA also do work on behalf of AGSA. We are very aware of that, and to the extent that the Contract Work Committee of AGSA that allocate work out to private firms to assist them with their mandate, that section of the audit is not performed by internal audit, it's not reviewed by them, it's referred to external audit who are independent in that they do not do any work for AGSA. So if there were any conflicts, we'd take that work away from them and get the external audit to cover that. The next bullet point is a key, probably the most important aspect of internal audit. We look to them based on the few thousand hours that they spend on the internal audit, that they are satisfied that the internal control and risk management processes within the organization are both adequate and effective. And we did get that. As I said earlier, before the AG and his team came in, the actual wording of their conclusion was that they largely adequate and effective, and that internal controls and risk management is of a medium risk. I did mention that IT controls is always a crucial area, and there have been concerns about that, but the AGSA has, and under the guidance and decision of the DAG, they have strengthened their team with two very, very senior, the person in charge and the deputy in charge of the IT function are both new recruits and are people of substantial experience. And that is a very significant issue for us, and we're very pleased to be able to report that, Chair. The conclusion is set out in bold print at the bottom of page 10. Moving on to the next page, I mentioned earlier, and I reiterate, we do meet with both the internal and external auditors without management being present, and get assurance, in particular, that no undue pressure was put on them to suppress any findings. The current internal auditors, when I say current, relating to the 2018-2019 year end, were SNG Grant Thornton, Cizwe and Sibula Kubota. We have gone out to tender. We felt we needed to do that. I think they'd been the internal auditors for I think it was 7 years, and we believed that we needed to test the market, and I will refer to that a little bit later. In fact, right now on the next page, we have appointed Ngubane and Company as the outsourced internal auditors for the next 3 years, but always external internal audit appointments are reviewed on an annual basis, and in fact, the external auditors need to be approved by your committee chair on an annual basis. Ngubane, I'm pleased to say, 100% black-owned and over 50% black female-owned. A very, very nice development in terms of our appointment, and was a key factor in their appointment. Obviously, their ability to do the audit would be overruling requirements and expectations from us as a committee, and indeed from the DAG and her team. and we're satisfied that is the case. They do also do work, as I referred to, on a contract basis for AGSA, and they would not be appointed to do that if there were any doubts as to their ability. We do have a couple of pages talking about them and their capabilities. With your permission and approval, Chair, I do not propose to go through those. They're three pages, and they certainly are a very proactive firm in terms of what they do and the organizations of which they are members, that they don't necessarily have to be, but they do undertake to be, and that's very reassuring for us. Moving on then, Chair, to external audit. Similar to internal audit, we review and approve their annual audit plan and their budgeted fee, terms of engagement, etc. The standard thing in terms of the King Report and King Code is the independence of internal audit could be impaired where they provide non-audit services. We've been very strict on that, and I can't think of an instance where we have approved that in many years. That is again the case this year, so no non-audit services provided at all. Again, we met with them separately, as we did with internal audit, to make sure that they were happy with the process they go through. Excuse me, Chair. And we do recommend to your committee, Chair, that that you confirm their reappointment as the external auditors for the next year. We, as I said earlier, we're very, very pleased that they've been very active in improving their broad-based black economic empowerment level, and we will continue to monitor that going forward. In terms of our role in risk management and the effectiveness of controls, I mentioned earlier that the risk and ethics function within AGSA is, in my experience, truly of an exceptional nature, way beyond what I see in other companies. And again, without boasting, I do chair an audit committee of a company listed on the JSE, and I have past experience as a financial director of a company listed in the JSE. And they are to be commended for their efforts in that regard. Both the current head of that function and the previous head happens to be here. She's now in charge of strategy and transformation of AGSA. Have been truly outstanding in their roles. We look at the risk appetite of the organization. Every organization has risks, and you need to set out, in terms of best practice, what risks you identify risks, you have processes to mitigate those risks, and then you have a residual risk. No organization operates without residual risks, and we're happy that the appetite, the statement that they have in place is appropriate for AGSA. Again, in terms of King, you have a combined assurance model. If members allow me, I'll just take you through that very quickly. There are, as defined in rules and regulations in King, there are three levels of defense against, in terms of monitoring or providing assurance in an organization that that it is operating adequately and effectively. The first level is management within the organization. Senior people review the functions of middle management, who in turn oversee the functions of their reportees. Your second level is organizations, functions such as, for example, the audit committee. Your third level, and there's also a remuneration committee, as I'm sure you're all aware. So those type of functions. The third level are your internal and external auditors. And another example is in terms of post-retirement medical aid benefits. They do employ an actuarial firm to review that. And that gives us very, very high level of assurance on the adequacy of that provision that is recorded in the financial statements. We as chartered accountants are well trained in financial matters and audit processes and procedures, but we clearly are not actuaries, and hence we get that internal assurance, external assurance. We also monitor any issues that are raised either internally by, in particular, the risk and ethics function, internal and external auditors. We have what we call a tracking log. Any report items that are raised, we monitor that matters raised in prior year are a key focus of management, and that corrective action is taken. Inevitably, some of those actions will not cannot be fixed immediately within 1 year. Anything that is not fixed gets carried forward again to the next year for further review. And then, conclusion of the Committee on Risk Management and Internal Controls is that nothing came to our attention that would contradict the key finding of internal audit that regarding the adequacy and effectiveness of controls. Again, in terms of King, the adequacy and or the assessment, an assessment of the chief financial officer and the finance function needs to be considered. We do rely on feedback from both external and internal audit on that, and I'm pleased to report that the CFO, who is present here, and I don't want her to get a swollen head, but she certainly has the skills and experience to fulfill her duties as the CFO, and she has a very well-resourced finance team who equally are suitably qualified, and her 2IC is sitting down at the end there, and he and her, obviously, as I've said, well qualified, and we're very lucky, or our country is lucky, if I could put it to that extent, that we have people of that caliber in an organization as important as AGSA. And as I said earlier, we then recommend to the DAG that she may, we recommend to her that she should sign the annual financial statements and integrated report that are submitted through SCOAC to Parliament. Chair, I'd like to move on to local government debt. The ability of municipalities, particularly the smaller ones, in terms of their finances, is a major problem, again, to the country But in terms of AGSA, in terms of their ability to meet their obligations to pay audit fees, many of them have modified audit reports. As I'm sure you and your committee would understand, Chair, when you have problems arising on audit, you extend your testing, and that costs additional money, and they really don't, they really struggle to meet their commitments. If you look at the bar chart, it just stands out so clearly. The level of debt, and it is increasing each year. Given that you have a new committee chair, I would say that SCOAG over the last few years has certainly focused on this and is assisting the AGSA in their negotiations with National Treasury, and we as a committee would plead with you to continue that as your predecessors have done, Chair. In terms of financial highlights, you will see that the cash balance has increased from last year. They set themselves a target a number of years ago, Chair, to have 3 months' reserves, and that in terms of cash in the organization. That means that if there was absolute non-payment of debtors, they have the resources to meet their financial obligations for a period of 3 months. It was a significant target that they set themselves, and for a number of years was below 2 months, and in fact even less than 1.5 months. They have increased that to 2.7 months, and so they are really getting very close to that 3 month target that they set themselves. They are obviously proud of that, and we commend them on their efforts in that respect. I know it may seem strange to commend an organization that has not yet met internal targets, but they've made such significant strides to get there that we compliment them on that. That, as I say, has been supported by SCOAG in the past, and as we've set out, the President has signed the Public Audit Excess Fee Act, and that which previously came straight from Treasury is now a direct charge against the National Revenue Fund. There is a situation where what they call the 1%ers, where the fees exceed 1% of the income of the organization, or the entity that they're reviewing, can be recovered from National Treasury, Chair, but that has not always happened, and this change that it'll come straight from National Revenue Fund is certainly to be welcomed. Chair, on page 22, which is really the crux of this, is that we would recommend to you that the integrated annual report and the annual financial statements are noted by your committee, and that I would emphasize that these documents are of a very, very high standard, and the CFO and the Tsivatane here, who oversees the integrated annual report, really are very proud of their achievements. They have won recognition and awards for the quality of those documents. And as an audit committee, it's really our pleasure to report that through to you and your committee, Chair. We also ask you to approve the reappointment of the external auditor, Crowe Johannesburg, as I've said a couple of times, they are really taking to heart the pressure that originated from SCOAG and through us, the pressure that has been put on them to transform their organization. They are focusing on purchasing items, supplies from black empowered organizations, from SMMEs, and they are investing in people development. They've increased their recruiting of previously disadvantaged individuals to a very significant level. If I remember correctly, something like 80% of the organization. At a senior level, partner level, ownership of the firm, they do fall short, Chair, but they are focusing on that as well. I may mention that I would like to mention that the partner in charge of the audit of AGSA is not a white male, if I could put it that way. Your predecessors used that expression. They said to us, please do not bring us a firm don't come and recommend to us a firm that's not transformed with a white male as the audit partner. So that's our sincere pleasure to tell you that is not the case. Chair, that wraps up our formal reports. But obviously we are very happy, well, I say we, I guess in this case it's I, and very happy to do our best to answer any questions that you or your committee would like to put to us.
Thank you very much for the report. We have allowed that the report should go in depth to have a fair understanding of what sort of financials are carried by the AG and what sort of a supportive intent in terms of sustainability of such an institution, and thirdly the standard that goes through the actual performance in as far as that office is concerned. You would imagine having the Office of the Auditor General who would come with flimsy financials while they have a responsibility to look into the same areas in as far as the number of auditees overall in as far as the supply of fiscals is concerned. So greatly it gives a fair indication as to how safely it is to have such an institution with a responsibility as enshrined in both the Constitution and other legislations here. Without squeezing the members out, are there any questions in this regard? Taking note that we're going to have time to discuss areas that they have asked us to do in terms of reflection. One of those will be the appointment of the external auditors. The second one in terms of the identified areas in terms of the... I could say something in terms of emphasis, the debt, which is somewhat rising against the auditees. The third element of what we still have to remain to discuss ourselves is family. While we appreciate the level of surplus, what is it that we have to do with such going forward? And as well in appreciation, we would have a firm view on the areas that are still going to be raised by the Auditor General in the overall the performance of the institution. So if there are any questions, you are free to do so before I allow the Auditor General to give the report. Ms. Honorable Peter? Okay.
Thanks, Chair. One belongs to a person. Chair,
The chairperson has partly responded to my question, but I think I should ask for record purposes. If I mean, especially with the recommendation that they are making, have you made a due diligence to look at the quality of transformation program from the company itself, if it's not just a window dressing approach to address the transformation, but also to secure, you know, the appointment itself, so that also looking at the risk involved in the event that the company doesn't get work maybe 5-10 years down the line from government, and they decide to, just for a lack of a better word, to retrench. So they don't start with the ones that were part of the transformation and go back to square one, if I'm clear with that. And the last question, Chair, was with the continued increase of debt, of course, I understand that there's also government entities now that are beginning to owe the AGE's office. If that is the case, what are you doing with that? And is there any intervention that you would like the committee to assist on? Thank you very much.
Thank you. Another question? Okay.
I don't know what it is, but let me say it. Oh, I got it now. It's a suggestion.
Okay.
It's a suggestion. Chair, I do have questions which relate to this particular input, but have in mind that why not allow all presentations to be done, lest we see ourselves harping on one issue.
Okay. You had that. Okay.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you to Mr. Besman-Simons for the presentation. My name is Jan de Villiers. I'm from the Democratic Alliance, and I'm new to this committee. So my question is really, in your presentation, you make the statement about local government debt and that you would like SCOAC to provide further support to the AGSA on this specific issue. And I mean, on this issue, it's not only the actual debt of the municipalities of local government, it's also audit fees owed to the Auditor General, which is part of that debt, I would assume. So, practically, specifically for someone like me who's a new committee member, how would SCOAC effectively assist the AG, and what would you need our assistance with? How would we practically help you on this issue? And then lastly, I would just also like for clarity to understand, are you satisfied with the audit fees, and specifically the fees as a comparison to what is charged by audit fees to in the private sector that the Auditor General charges for its audit fees for the local for the government bodies that it audits? Thank you.
Okay. Bearing in mind with the proposal which has been made, let's take those questions, but the response would come later on, that we allow the Auditor General to give the report somewhat. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, ma'am.
Thank you, Chairperson. We appreciate the engagement with the role players in the room. I'm not going to repeat because my colleague has covered my question, and at the core, obviously, of it, and I think in his last input, is the fact that are these fees too high? Is that one of the reasons that we have this high debt? Or, you know, one needs to look at that, but I think that is the core of many of our concerns, so I'm not going to repeat it. I'll just leave it at that. I'm covered by my colleague. Thank you.
Thank you. Fine. Can we then, in appreciation, I hope you have noted the questions. Let's allow the Auditor General to make the presentation, and thereafter would
allow yourselves, if indeed some of the elements of what they've indicated are not answered in the input by the Auditor General. Is that okay?
Yes.
Fine. Over to you, Auditor General, PG.
Thank you, pardon. Normally, we, as Audit Committee, we do not stay for the AG and the DAG's presentation. That is internal feedback to yourselves and doesn't fall within our role and function. So I'm not sure if you're asking me to stay for that, or if once you've finished with us as an Audit Committee, whether I may excuse myself, if you could clarify that. Do you want me to respond to some of the questions that have been raised, Chair?
I would have loved that the Auditor General make some areas in terms of his report.
Okay.
Which is part of the areas of signed off by the Audit Committee in terms of their own performance. And it might somewhat assist all of us to broaden that kind of scope going forward.
Thank
if,
you, Chair.
If indeed you could, just it's not going to take long, we'd be happy to have you as part of the session.
Yeah. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah. AG?
Good morning. Thank you very much, Chairperson. My role today is going to be very limited in terms of speaking. I'm going to try and conduct myself today as a unitary board that I have been assigned the responsibility to carry out. And then I'll pass on to the Deputy AG at some point, who is the accounting officer. You know, when you are appointed as the Auditor General, you don't get told that you are a board all by yourself. So you meet with yourself and you interact with yourself, and then other people must do the rest of the work. So I'll try and elevate that part of being the unitary board structure, if you look at the Public Audit Act carefully. Chair, as I say, the operational side of the report which you have, which is that presentation, the DAG will do justice, I'm sure, to that. But one of the things that I just wanted to flag for the members, particularly this being the first year that we are interacting on our annual report, is to reassert some of the prerequisites for our institution, as well as why our institution carries on the work it does. One of those is the principle of independence. Among the things that are important for us, which we always have to make sure are in place, regardless of what the operational outcomes are going to be, is the existence of an appropriate and effective statutory framework. So the Public Audit Act, as amended, is still operational, and we do our work in accordance with the guidance of the Public Audit Act. The next one, in terms of the components of independence, is the independence of the head of the institution, as well as the other members of the institution. I can also confirm that we go through a process to confirm our independence from the people that we audit. And so that is still in place as one of the key fundamentals and foundational elements for this institution. Thirdly, we also have a sufficiently broad mandate and full discretion in the discharge of our functions. So the mandate that you see in the Public Audit Act is sufficiently broad, and it provides us the full discretion to discharge our functions. Generally, we also have unrestricted access to the information of the auditees that we audit, with very limited exceptions in certain instances. For example, in the security cluster, we can never claim that we can have full unrestricted access to every single thing. So it is in that context that I say we do have unrestricted access to information that is generally available for auditors in order to do their work. Chair, we also have the right and the obligation to report on our work. If you want to appreciate this, the Audit Office of Somalia only got this right this week. Only this week. And that's just how we appreciate the fact that we are able to report on the work that we do, because an auditor who does work that can never find its way into the public domain is as good as that work not being done. We also enjoy the freedom to decide the content and timing of our audit reports. So we decide the content based on our evidence that we picked up on the audits, and we also decide on the timing to publish and disseminate those audit reports. That's why this week we were coming in and out of the different portfolio committees in Parliament while I was also navigating other spaces across the country to engage key stakeholders on this work. The existence of effective follow-up mechanisms on our recommendations has even been strengthened by the amendment that was recently promulgated on the 1st of April. And lastly, the financial administrative autonomy and the availability of appropriate human, material, and monetary resources is the lubricant that enables us to do the stuff that is required in respect of our independence as an audit office. So that as a foundation makes it possible for us to claim that we are able to report on anyone that we examine as instructed by the Public Audit Act without being constrained in doing our work. I think it is important that the committee appreciates this as well, because when some of these things are not as we experience them now, we are going to run back to you and ask you to exercise your powers to assist us to restore this foundation, because without this foundation, the rest of what we will talk about will just not be of much substance. So I think it's important to anchor this annual report around those key elements of what makes us as an audit institution, as well as what defines what is behind the conclusions that we make. There are many people that often misunderstand what we do, and sometimes I think it's important that we reassert it here so that people don't see us as investigators, but we are the people that carry out a statutory audit mandate with a very firm and strong foundation of independence. Now, in order to live up to these, we also have made certain undertakings and promises as an office. And we said one of the things that we are going to do is to strengthen the accountability, the transparency and integrity of government and public sector entities. That's one of the things that flows through those strategic objectives that the Deputy AG is going to deal with. Another one is that we also committed over the last number of years right into the future that we will demonstrate our ongoing relevance to citizens, Parliament, and other stakeholders. So what's contained in this integrated annual report is how did we fare in respect of that promise. And the other last promise which we made is that we are going to be a model organization by leading by example. So we've made those commitments, and what's contained in our integrated annual report is to give you a sense of how we have traversed the environment in which we audit towards achieving those objectives. But the last part, which I think I need to also talk to, which comes hand in hand with the principle of independence, is that we must demonstrate that we have the necessary professional competences to carry out the work that we do. These competences require us to create a working environment where there is trust and ethics, which are observed right across the chain, so that people, when they make decisions and apply their judgment, they know that they are doing it on a clear foundation with regards to ethics. We also adopt auditing standards so that we can guide our teams as to how to go about carrying out their work as statutory auditors. We also attract competent people from different professions because of the demands of the work that we do, and we also undertake measurement of performance as an audit institution so that we can begin to apply ourselves when things do not get the way we expect them to. So those are the key fundamentals, Chair. So in essence, if one were to put it down to, shall I say, biology, I think we rely in our office generally on our sensory organs, our ability to hear, our ability to see, and with those two in place, our ability to process what we saw and what we heard. And that to us makes for the kind of audit conclusions that we bring to the country. So we see things, and we hear things, and we apply our technical standards to assess whether the things that we see and the things that we hear do make sense in accordance with what is expected when it comes to the management of finances in the country. So, Chair, that is the context of what you are going to hear in terms of the detail that the Deputy Auditor General is going to now deal with. And perhaps just as a reminder, so that I also don't forget, I remind myself as well that this is my penultimate report in respect of the 2018-2019 financial year. I'll come back when other things arise as a part of the conversation.
Thank you very much, AD. Good morning, Chair and Honourable Members. The presentation that's on the board now, I'm hoping everybody's had a chance to look at the copy. It really is a summary of what's sitting in the Integrated Annual Report. I will talk through the four V's that make up our strategy, which strategy is informed by the very principles that the AG spoke to just now. The four V's being value add, the basis on which we conduct quality audits, use the fact that we are able to see all of government to extract audit-derived insights that are designed to help those that run government to do so better. So that's V1, so that's value-added, so I'll talk through that one. I'll then move on to visibility with impact, and that's the one that's really about how we engage with critical stakeholders with the outcome of our work, again, founded on the principles that the AG spoke about now. I will move on after that to viability, which deals with the technical professional competencies within the office that allow us to actually do our work. And the last one is on vision and values, which is really about how we lead as a role model organization, one that is leading by example in all matters relating to transparency, to good governance, as well as even to transformation. So I'll talk to all of that in turn. Starting with value add, the first slide really depicts the number of audits that we engage with every single year. As members are aware, we audit all three spheres of government, as well as a number of state-owned entities. So the number of audit reports that we signed off in the year 18-19 was just over 1,000. So the people that work for the Office of the AG signed off all those audits throughout the course of the year. And I think it's quite important that we note the growth in the number of audits that we've been engaged with over the term from 14-15 up until the year ended in 18-19. That's really a mark of how we've taken on some of the state-owned entities that we were previously not auditing, and that has increased not just the volume of work that the AG's office is engaged with, but also the complexity thereof. The next slide deals with the timeliness of our audits. Over time, the number of audits that we're able to complete on time has deteriorated in percentage terms. If you look at 14-15, we were able to complete our audits, 94% of our audits on time, as per the legislation, specifically PFMA and MFMA, respectively. In 18-19, we were able to complete only 85% of our audits on time. The key reasons for that are twofold. There's parts about internal factors and predominantly about external factors. Let me deal with the external factors first. The PFMA requires that we receive the audits for provincial and national government on the 31st of May and complete those audits by the 31st of July. Quite often, when we arrive, the quality of financials that are submitted to us is such that the readiness of that entity to audit isn't quite right. So there is a long period of adjustment. So the version of financials we receive on the 31st of May is quite often very different from what we sign off on the 31st of July. That delays the audits. Many of the audits are delayed by that. The other matter that leads to delays in completing audits are about the complexity, the technical complexity of the issues that arise on audit, but also the contestations, and I'll talk about that a little bit later in the slide, where many auditees are pushing back on the outcomes of an audit and they take the opportunity to challenge the conclusions of an audit and therefore push back on the timeliness of completing those audits. There were a large number of audits that were not completed at the end of this most recent PFMA cycle because a number of state-owned entities had financial health concerns, and we were unable to get from them a signed set of annual financial statements based on the going concern assumption. So until they were able to secure the funding that would secure or confirm whether or not they'd be able to operate within the foreseeable future, we would not have been able to complete those audits. And that related to a number of the state-owned entities. So that really explains the shift from the 94% of timely completion in 2014-15 to where we are now in 2018-19. And of course, I think it's quite important to note that the pressures associated with the poor quality financials that are submitted, with the pushbacks, put a lot of pressure on the audit teams. The teams employed by us doing the actual audit, but also the teams on the other side of the table. If an audit goes on longer than it should have, it takes away the time that people could be using to actually run the entity outside of the audit process. And of course, it also pushes up the costs of audit. A number of the audits in our portfolio that are listed in Schedule 2 of the PFMA has actually increased significantly over time. From 13-14, we were auditing six state-owned entities. As at the end of the financial year 18-19, we were auditing directly 13 of those 21. Section 4.3 of the Public Audit Act takes account of the notion that for a long period of time, the office wasn't auditing those state-owned entities directly and that they were audited by private sector auditors. The Constitution, as well as the PAA, gives the Auditor General the responsibility and the right to audit anybody who accesses funds out of the national budget. However, Section 4.3 took account of the notion that at the time that the Public Audit Act was promulgated, not all of the state-owned entities were audited by the Auditor General. It then allowed the Auditor General to use his or her discretion to take on these audits directly. And over time, that's been the journey where we've taken on the audits of Nexa, of the Central Energy Fund, SABC, DBSA, Danel. All of those audits we've taken on and audited directly as we've grown our capacity to do that, as well as we've responded to the specific requests by members of the executive as well as members of oversight for us to actually conduct those audits ourselves. So that's been the journey, and it's been informed, as I say, by the professionalization journey in the office. The audits that we don't audit directly right now, so the biggest ones would have been Transnet and Eskom that you didn't see on those logos. As at the end of 2018-19, those were the two major ones that we didn't audit. And one of the logos on that slide is TCTA, which is in the water sector. And I think I just want to use that as an example to tell the story about how we've actually taken on these audits. We designed a process about 5 years ago to drive greater oversight over the audits that we were not conducting, where private sector auditors were appointed by the boards and the shareholder in those particular instances. And that allowed us to not only drive consistency in terms of how those audits were being approached, but also give us insight on the key audit risks that were emerging in the portfolio. One such is TCTA, which sits in the water services value chain, and we identified that it would be useful for us to audit it directly so that we could mitigate the audit risks that were emerging there, but also be able to give valuable insights to government on what are the loopholes that can be addressed if we are to sort out the value chain of providing water services to citizens effectively. So we started by conducting closer oversight. The following year, we then got some of our people to do some of the work and seconded them onto the audit whilst it was still being signed by a private sector auditor. And then this year, 2018-19, is the first time that we're auditing it. And that model is one that is serving us pretty well, and such that the Transnet audit for the most recent PFMA cycle, yes, it has still been signed off by the private sector auditor that had been appointed by the board and the minister, SNG Grant Thornton in particular. However, we had some involvement in that audit, part of deploying some of our teams in there in that audit to work together with the private sector auditor as part of the journey of taking on the audit on a full, on a direct basis. The regularity auditors, the teams that conduct the annual audits, are supplemented by specialist auditors within the office. And those specialist auditors comprise the ones in investigations, and they are the more the ones with more forensic fraud analytics, fraud identification expertise, and they complement the regularity auditors. Similarly, the information systems auditors complement the regularity auditors, and we also use performance auditors to complement the work that the regularity audit teams do. And we do this because it allows us to improve the quality of what we do, improve the efficiency with which we actually conduct these audits by using specialist knowledge of how information systems work, by using specialist knowledge of how supply chain management processes work, so that we can identify risk, we can audit greater samples, and therefore give much greater valuable insights to government on where things are going wrong. Similarly, performance audit, whilst they sometimes do standalone audits, we've used more of those skills to complement the work of the regularity auditors, so that when we do our audit of performance information, we're able to give a much richer set of insights to those that run government on the things that could be improved if we are to see much greater efficiency and effectiveness of government programs. I think we can skip the next three slides because the points I have made If there are specific members who are interested in some of the detail of the work of performance audit or other specialist auditors, I would like to respectfully refer you to page 78 of our annual report. Therein we detail some of the work that the specialist auditors have done, either as part of the regularity audit process, but also as standalone audits and investigations. In 2017, we implemented an amended audit methodology, and we had designed such a new audit methodology so that it would help us integrate better the work of our regularity auditors as well as that of the specialist auditors. We had designed this new methodology to increase our ability to use fraud detection experts to focus on what matters, to look more carefully at the value chains across government. And so the last 2 years have been about reaping the benefits of having invested in such a methodology. And we'll continue to do that. I think I'll go to the next one. Part of the value chain approach, I spoke a little bit about the water services sector and the decisions we were able to make around which other entities we've got to be auditing directly. We also looked at other sectors and were able to extract similar value-adding insights around where are the gaps in delivering and implementing on government programs, so that those insights, the ones that run government, can actually use to drive the relevant improvements. And those sectors are not just in water and sanitation, but also we looked at the expanded public works program that's being coordinated by the Department of Public Works. And we also looked at the different activities of the various state entities or state bodies within the value chain of providing human settlements. And we were able to identify important insights around the impact of poor project management, the impact of poor financial management, the impact of failures in the process of managing supply chain, as well as the impact of poor processes in managing grants from different spheres of government. And it is our hope that those insights will be used by government to drive the requisite improvements. I spoke earlier on about the growth in the number of audit pushbacks and contestations, where there is immense pressure put on our auditors to either change their audit reports because new information is submitted at the end of the process, where there is not adequate work done following year one audit, so that when we come in year two, the improvement is there. What tends to happen on the ground is that we arrive and the same sort of problems are found in the audit samples, and then the pressure is about, can I resubmit? So it is those contestations that have been growing in both cycles that are putting immense pressure in the audit process. We take very seriously the need to provide good audit quality in each of the audits that we conduct. And it's something that we monitor diligently every single year. We have a team that's independent of the auditors to assess a sample of audit files, to select a sample of audit files and to assess the quality within those audit files to ensure that the audits that have been done and completed by the auditors have been done in compliance with our audit standards, in compliance with our known audit methodology, and that the documentation of the files is consistent with what we expect. The team that's independent of the audit teams is our quality control unit, and they examined 59 audit files this financial year, and in 72 cases they found that those files were appropriate, and the balance they found that there were shortcomings in the documentation on the file or shortcomings of some form in how that audit would have been conducted. In none of these audit instances did we find that the audit outcomes were inappropriate. So in none of those instances did we find that the audit opinion that had been issued by the auditor was inappropriate. What we found were deficiencies in how some matters would have been documented on the file. It's a matter that we take very seriously because, indeed, it is a key component of how we want to protect the reputation of the office by demonstrating that we are able to deliver quality audits at all times. So the 72% achievement is lower than our target of being between 80 and 90%. And our response has been to look very carefully at what are the root causes that drive this and how do we definitely improve that quickly and sustainably so that we don't have audit quality that deteriorates and starts to compromise the confidence that people will have in the work of the office. Some of the things that we've had to do is to look at the level of technical training we provide to our teams, the level of technical support we provide to our teams as they deal with technical complexities on audits. We've had to look carefully at the pre-issuance controls over all the audit files. Before an audit opinion is issued, there is somebody who's independent of the audit team who looks at that file. And we found that there's opportunity to strengthen that control so that we don't have instances where files do not meet our very high audit quality standards. So we're on a journey to driving the improvements that are responding to the decline in audit quality, and it is a matter that is enjoying the attention of all the players within the office of the AG. One of the key factors that is impacting us is the need for us to provide greater support to some of the newer, younger senior managers in the environment. Many of our professionals are younger, and sometimes the pressures on the audit base, they're not able to manage effectively, and ours is to make sure that we provide them with the support and the coaching necessary to allow them to do so and be able to complete quality files with the confidence that they must. Before I wrap up on audit quality, it's important for me to highlight two very important things. In the past financial year, we took on some big audits at the time that we withdrew the concurrence for two private sector firms to conduct audits in the public audit space, specifically when we withdrew our concurrence with the appointments of Ngongi and KPMG. And what that did, especially when KPMG, when Ngongi went into liquidation, was that we had to take on some of these audits and do so very quickly in the middle of those audits. That put immense pressure on our team. We knew that the pressure would be there, and what we did was we put additional quality control measures so that at the end of the process we would have quality audit files in those specific instances. And that seemed to stretch the capacity within the office, and I think it's one of the things that has compromised the audit quality outcome. In this year, we also had the phase-in of 16 audits in terms of applying the additional responsibilities and powers arising from the amended Public Audit Act. Those 16 files were subjected to additional quality control measures because we had to be very careful on what it is we do, being a new area for us. So again, that would have stretched the support that's available to the rest of the institution. So both the matters around taking on more complex audits rapidly, as well as the implementation of the new extended powers, which came into effect on the 1st of April, would have resulted in us making decisions to put more capacity on securing the quality of those higher risk files, and it took away some of the attention on some of the files. But I want to reassure members that in none of those instances did we find that the audit reports issued were inappropriate. In terms of the Public Audit Act that was amended and those amendments having come into effect on the 1st of April, members will recall at the last meeting the AG spoke at great length about this. This is just a report on the activities within the office to prepare for such an implementation. We worked hard to develop and publish the regulations that support the legislation. We crafted and got approval on key policies that support the implementation of these amended powers. We had to train our staff, develop the training, and roll out the training to all the audit teams and do so very quickly. And we've also had to engage with the public bodies that would form part of the referral mechanism. So all of that work we did, and it allowed us to implement the amended powers and responsibilities on 16 of the audits across the institution. I turn now to visibility for impact. That's really where we are engaging with those that run different state institutions, those that oversee them, and to share our insights on the work that we've done. I won't go through the detailed chair on whom we've engaged, but briefly just to say that we engage with the portfolio committees. You would have seen many of our teams busy with different portfolio committees here over the past week. We work with coordinating ministries and sharing our insights on the work that they do, specifically APAC, as well as the accounting officers. In particular, on accounting officers, we have the status of records review, which is an early warning mechanism that allows us to engage with accounting officers during the course of the year, outside of the audit process, as a way of allowing them some insight on the things that are going well, and particularly on the things that are going wrong, that if they remedied well before the audit started would give them a better outcome. So that's a key part of activity in this particular V. We have spent a lot of time and effort in rolling out the status of records review at 666 auditees. So 666 accounting officers have had the benefit of our in-year monitoring, in-year support program, where we share those insights. And what we've learned out of that is, based on the feedback that the accounting officers gave, is that we could do it earlier for them so that they have enough time to implement the required remedial action. But in large measure, most of them have given very positive feedback on how that status of records review program has supported them in understanding the matters that require their attention if they are to meet their responsibilities as stipulated in the PFMA, and if they are to either sustain or improve their audit outcomes when the audit comes around. With oversight, SCOPA uses the outcomes of our work quite significantly, as does APAC when they look at the tracking and the monitoring of the implementation of our recommendations in their different spaces. The House Chairperson is another one of the stakeholders that we share our insights with, and it informs a lot of the work that they do. And APAC, once again, uses the insights of the work that we do in their capacity building for both APAC and their MPACs. We also spend quite a bit of time with standard setters and regulators within the profession and within public administration more broadly, and the details are on the board, highlighting the work that we do in terms of working with those that set standards, those that are responsible for overseeing the implementation thereof, the ASB, the Office of the Accountant General within Treasury, the Office of the Procurement Officer. So we interact with them on an ongoing basis around what we're seeing on the audit base and sharing insights that would ultimately serve to enhance the levels of accountability and transparency.
I'm looking at the pace of the DG, also
the atmosphere here.
Also the fact that the office
of the AG has actually given us enough time to go through this documentation.
If she could be like on just highlights. Because we've had time
okay.
to go through.
That's fine.
I could say you're doing very well.
No, it's
she's just doing very well.
I suppose I do understand the time pressures in the room, Chair, and I will indeed take this as read. Maybe it's because I'm just so proud of the work that we do, that I share it with such, in such detail.
Just continue as you do. You see, at least I'm doing very well. I know where he's looking at. But you have heard, eh?
Yes, I have heard, Chair. Yeah. Okay, so we engage with citizens, which you well know, in terms of sharing the work we do, whether through the presentations, whether through social media and the media briefings directly. We've also taken quite a bit of time to engage with different stakeholders within society more broadly so that people have an understanding of the work that the office does, how it impacts them, and also it helps us to develop our work even better. I think we can skip all of those. I think international is something we must just highlight, where we remain quite active in the international arena, chairing the capacity building workstream of INTOSAI, and the work that's done there. We also serve as a secretariat for AfroSAI-E, and we continue to support their programs, which are designed to support the development of other supreme audit institutions on the continent. Viability, Chair, looks at three areas. It's really about the people in the office, the skills, the development thereof. It looks at the internal environment from a tools and systems point of view, and the last thing is really about the finances. Highlights on the people side, we have a very strong pipeline. We recruit many of our people through promotions because we've developed them. What that does is it drives our confidence in the development work we do, but also it highlights the responsibility for us to keep that pipeline strong through ongoing development. And that's really marked why we continue to focus on developing professional auditors. We have 630 of them as at year end, and I think the number keeps growing in terms of CAs, but we have other professional auditors and accountants within the environment. This year saw us achieve 1,000 CAs that were trained through the office since the scheme was started 20 years ago. That's something that I think all of us as South Africans ought to be very proud of. 90% of those being people from previously disadvantaged backgrounds, many of those African females, and that being a major contribution into the profession but also into society more broadly. Okay, let's go. And I think just maybe stay on this particular slide for a moment. This tells the journey of the training scheme in the office, and it's really about the benefit of ongoing, consistent attention to building and sustaining the institution's development of the trainee auditor scheme. So when we talk about 1,000 CAs that have been created through the scheme, it really comes out of the diligent focus over many years of investment, ongoing investment, such that we are able to continue to build on that. At the moment, we are presenting a number of candidates to write their professional exams through SAICA. Over the past year, 15% of the people that wrote the ITC board exam, that's part one of SAICA's board exam, 15% came from the office of the AG nationwide. And that, again, being a source of pride for all of us as South Africans. Okay. Our pipeline, which is really a statement that we continue to develop the training scheme, we continue to develop the pipeline of future auditors, takes the form of how we support universities through designating trainees to go and work within universities as tutors and as lecturers. We provide bursaries for people to study towards becoming chartered accountants through the different mechanisms that are available within the profession. And in 2011, the office celebrated 100 years and started the Centenary Scholarship Fund. 32 young people from different parts of the country were identified to be issued bursaries to go and study at different institutions. And the story is one that I think deserves some acknowledgement, for 18 of them have been absorbed into our training scheme in that they finished their tertiary education processes, and they are now working within the office of the AG, getting ready to become part of the next 1,000 of CAs that are created within the profession out of the office of the AG. 6 of those students who wouldn't have completed their academic studies for one reason or the other have been absorbed into the institution, and they are working with us in different parts of the institution. Again, young people who, were it not for this, would not have had the opportunity to have some study at university, but also would have found it even more difficult to find a job elsewhere. Only 4 of those 32 haven't been able to complete their obligations, in that either they've been unwell or unable to complete their studies for another reason. The AG talked about professional competence, looking at technical competence, but also leadership and management, so that we know how to interpret what we see, what we hear, into what we apply older standards to. So we've upped the not just the level of technical training that we've done quite significantly, because that helps us respond to the complexity of the work we've taken on, the volume, the different state-owned entities. It helps us respond to the requirements of the amended Public Audit Act, but it also helps us keep our auditors technically au fait with the demands of their work. We've also upped the level of development around leadership, and looking at all levels of leadership, we assessed leaders as individuals. We were able to diagnose what are the development needs, and then we're able to design programs in partnership with universities, UCT, Pretoria, and we're able to design programs that respond to our needs, but also the needs of the individuals concerned. Culture, being the one about the working environment the AG spoke about, that's an area that's enjoying a lot of our focus at the moment, really about making sure that our leaders are equipped and are leading effectively in changing the culture to one that is even more adaptive, more constructive and enabling, one that's characterized by high levels of trust and leadership effectiveness throughout the system. I think we can move on. The systems and tools the Audit Committee Chair spoke quite at length about, so I'm going to skip that. On transformation, we have a level 1 BBBE scorecard, and that being the outcome of work we've done over many years to attend not just to the employment equity progress within the institution, the skills development, enterprise development, our procurement processes, to make sure that indeed in every single one of the critical elements of BBBE, we are making the contribution we should. And that's consistent with our aspiration to lead by example in terms of being a responsible corporate citizen. So this is an achievement we're very proud of. Not all of our work do we do directly. Some of our work we outsource to private sector firms. We outsource some almost 600 million rand a year. And we look carefully at that to make sure that the firms to whom we are outsourcing this work are themselves transforming. So, and that's part of the criteria on the basis on which we allocate this work. We allocate to a large number of black women-owned firms. That's a measure that we have, a large number of black-owned firms. Half of our work this year went to black-owned firms. 85% of our work went to level 1 and level 2 contributors to BBBE. One of the things I'm very proud of is the Enterprise and Supply Development Program, through which we support emerging firms. Those younger people who want to start their own firms, we support them in that journey so that they're able to build sustainable businesses and be able to deliver work on our behalf, quality work on our behalf. So there are 27 beneficiaries of our ESD program. We give them support, sometimes in monetary terms and often in terms of training and other type of support. 6 of those are now part of our pool in terms of we are able to outsource work to them. They've created 160 jobs because of the support that we've been able to offer them, and they've also been continuing to grow. Our ethics management, we drive it in terms of not just the policies and the tools around the whistleblowing that the Audit Committee Chair spoke about, but also in terms of the advocacy for the right things, the conversations with different layers of management around what are the ethical dilemmas we might face, how do we make sure that we strengthen the ethical posture of our people when they are auditing in different sites across the country. Risk management I won't talk to because the audit committee chair did a sterling job of that. And just on viability, there was quite some work, some discussion on it when the audit committee chair spoke about it. I will simply highlight that we closed the year with a surplus of 71 million rand, which is consistent with our funding model. And we were able to achieve this in three ways. One is that we managed our revenues even better. We drove greater productivity. We looked carefully at how do we resource our teams, how do we ensure that we cost our audits more appropriately, and also how do we collect our fees. The second one, a second thing that we did was to manage costs in the environment, and that's something that we've done diligently over many years, and that cost-saving culture, I think, has been well established, but we also keep looking for other ways to cut costs within the office. That's also delivered some of the benefits that make this office financially viable, which is a critical part of our independence. Financially viable in very trying economic times. Our collections process has allowed us to collect quite diligently the cash that's sitting with different auditees that struggle to pay or that are not so disciplined about paying us, and we've been able to get that money in. We've also been able to negotiate with the National Treasury to get an additional 50 million rand beyond the original 48 million rand that they've given us in terms of supporting those auditees that can't afford their audit fees. We finished the year with just over 700 million rand in the bank, which improved our cash cover ratio. And we are continuing to manage our financial affairs in the same way going forward. Pressures around funding the costs associated with implementing the Public Audit Act are those that we continue to watch and manage very carefully. We have requested 50 million rand from the National Treasury to help us fund all of the costs associated with living up to the demands of these new responsibilities. The training, the capacity requirements. So all of those things we need to fund. We've made that request. We wait with bated breath for a response on it, and we remain hopeful that we'll get that appropriation. In the event that we don't, we'll continue to look for ways to shoulder those costs within the institution.
We can look at some lens on. He's serving at the committee on appropriation.
So I'm hoping he's heard it. Yeah, okay. If I finish now.
So that's incentive.
So now that I like the sound of that, Chair, I just want to close off by saying one of the things we'd like to request the committee to approve is for us to retain our surplus, our 71 million rand surplus for this year, instead of paying it back into the National Treasury. Much of the funds are going to be applied to the things we've spoken about earlier on, funding the costs associated with delivering on our added responsibilities, making sure that we capacitate the office in terms of the additional technical skills we might need, whether that's training the existing people, even bringing on some additional specifically technical skills. We're also in the process of looking for new accommodation for the head office. We've been in that building for many years, and in large measure, we've long outgrown it. So part of what we foresee as a tenant installation when we do find additional premises would be funded by the surplus if we were able to retain it. And that, Chair, is my bit. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. I'm going to return the floor to you quickly. But just want to highlight one or two things that may not have surfaced here, and you'll find them in the financial statements as well. One is a matter that I think ought to be in your handover report from the previous committee, which matter deals with a pending legal case regarding post-retirement medical benefits. I'm not going to go through a detail of it, but it relates to
former employees of the office. There's a pending court matter. It might surface in the new year, or it might surface further down the line in the court system, but it has progressed to a point where it is ready to now come out in court relating to some issues pertaining to the dispute between them and the office. I just want to flag it because I think it was meant to come out in your handover report. If it is not there, it is a matter we may need to have a conversation about. Lastly, as far as the Section 4.3 is concerned, one of the sentiments that we pick up around as we report on our work, including what we've been doing this week, there's this growing expectation that as an audit office, we ought to be auditing everything. The reality is that there are always limitations to that. We are constantly appraising the risk environment with regards to the Section 4.3 matter, and I think that the ultimate outcome of it, if we are all putting our risk hat on, is that it is not going to translate into every single publicly funded organization being audited by the AG, because there are many traps down the road if we do that. But I can assure you that what we showed you earlier, as far as the entities that we have taken on, they are the significant majority of the entities that are of public interest. They are already under our fold. We just want the committee to be appraised of our capacity as well as the risks down the line. Nobody can predict what the decisions of certain of our people are going to be in future when it comes to their employment prospects and all of that. And you don't want to sit with this huge portfolio of very significant state institutions to audit when, in fact, you have to contend with the realities of the market in one way or another. But I think those two, for me, would be one of the key issues that we must pick going forward, because that expectation might cause serious problems. It might cause serious disruptions even to what we are capable of delivering now. So I think it might be a case of deepening this conversation so that we can temper some of those expectations. Back to you, Chair.
We need a paper on that, huh? Yeah, we need a paper on that. Because already there's a challenge on the inclusion of some of the state-owned entities into your list, mainly ESCOM. You'll get that question as you meet with several committees on that aspect.
While you are mentioning ESCOM, as a brief comment on it, Chair, is that I was involved very recently in a conversation, just to elaborate, just to give a sense of what it takes to do an ESCOM. The firm that is currently doing ESCOM has to commit about 270 people. Now you can imagine the complexity of that operation. The 270 is probably tilted towards a lot of experienced auditors. Now to navigate the South African environment for 270 auditors, to put them in place for an audit like that, is a mission. Already what we are doing at Transnet is going to translate to on or about similar numbers, and it's already a mission even though we are already in the bus. Now, if the expectation is that we are going to climb the ESCOM bus further down the line in the next 2 years or so, you can imagine what it will take. It will be quite a huge exercise, and we don't want to be part of disrupting the natural oversight work that needs to happen with all these entities. And that is the extent of it. But the paper, you will get it from us anytime if you ask us to put that, because the matter has been coming forth all the time at the time when we already had 5. But now that we've got 14, it seems as if, that expectation is growing in size. But certainly I think we'll put together that paper to make sure that you have an understanding of our thinking.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, AG and your team, with the report, which I think the members would take their time to appreciate. But indeed, I think it really goes into heart that you are at work, and into the mechanisms that have been provided by the institution as the National Assembly in terms of the regulatory framework and the other related arms of allowing you to do your work quite well is well appreciated. There are a few questions that have been referred to your audit
committee, and I would allow them to just get into those questions as their response, and after that I would allow members to throw in some questions to as part of the input by the Auditor General in appreciation of your presentation. Over to
Thank you, pardon. The first question, if I understood correctly, was asking about transformation in the external auditors.
Yes.
Their firm. I think they come to the realization that they really, really need to focus on transformation. They are investing in socioeconomic things. They are giving discounts to emerging companies, particularly SMMEs, on their fees. They are recruiting heavily in terms of previously disadvantaged individuals. They are finding it very difficult to retain staff once they qualify as chartered accountants. The pressure in commerce and industry to hire well-qualified, previously disadvantaged individuals at a senior level has caused for a very significant increase in salaries, and it's very difficult for the private audit firms to compete with those entities, a number of which are government entities at all levels, local, provincial, and national, and state-owned enterprises. So, but they understand very, very clearly where SCOAC stands on the matter and the audit committee and in fact AGSA itself, Jess. So is it are they likely to deteriorate in terms of triple BEE level? I doubt it. They are very focused, in fact, of getting to a lower level rather than, when I say lower, numerically from 4 to 3 within 2 years, and will then reassess their situation, and I have no doubt in the long term would want to compete with other firms that have higher, have better ratings than them. There was a question about risks involved, and I didn't quite understand what that was. If the Honourable Member could expand on that. In terms of the increase in level of debtors, measures that the office has undertaken, when I say office, AGSA, they have an arrangement with, or they are encouraging significant debtors, long outstanding balances, to embark on a ring fence basis, where they ring fence the arrears debt, the debts in arrears, and pay those off over a period of time. So they appreciate that they're not going to collect everything all at once. They have taken a step, I guess one could say, suing yourself. If you have a government department suing another government department, in this case obviously a Chapter 9, and it's particularly local government debtors, and that has helped them recover fees by handing them fees over to attorneys to pursue that debt collection agencies, if I could call them that. The question from down here was related to how can SCOAC practically support AGSA in terms of debtors. I think there was a bit of humour between the DAG and an honourable member over there, who I gather serves on the Appropriations Committee. I think it very much rests around supporting AGSA in its negotiations with National Treasury. The DAG would be able to expand on that if requested by the Honourable Member. I think you also asked Honourable Member about the level of fees that are charged. The Auditor General, certainly in terms of work contracted out to private firms, they meet with SICA, which is the South African Institute of Chartered Accountants, and they set fees for an audit partner, and other fees for non-partners are set based on the salary level of the individual and the appropriate charge-out rate. Those rates are at quite a significant discount to the rates that private firms, certainly the larger private firms, charge in the marketplace. So I think it's fair to say that the rates that are charged either directly by AGSA or by firms operating on doing work on their behalf are very reasonable. Moving on, there was also, I think, a similar question about audit fees and are they too high, but I think I've dealt with that already. And I think that is, that's it. Could I add, say, something about a point that the DAG raised? The Quality Control Assessment Committee, it's a requirement of their terms of reference to have a member of the Audit Committee sit on that, and I've had the distinct pleasure of doing that. I always ask the guy in charge of quality control reviews at IRBA, the Independent Regulatory Board of Auditors, to give us some sense of how AGSA measures up against the large international firms that operate in South Africa. And he says, you know, they don't disclose percentage marks or whatever, their measurements. Those are not in the public domain. But he gives us an overall assurance that there is not an undue problem or not a major problem in the quality of work done by AGSA, and on a non-numeric basis they believe that the office is performing work at an acceptable level. Just thought I would add that, Chair.
Okay. Well, thank you very much from the Audit Committee side. Not unless there's any other thing that is left, which I think that a number of things have been covered. What is left from us is just to advise in terms of the finalized decision by the committee on the whether we agree with yourselves with the appointment as proposed and under which conditions. I think to follow the question which was asked, is that probably it is in your ambits to strictly follow the terms of transformation as they deepen in the company which you are somewhat proposing, and it might be of value as he was proposing you somewhat provide that a kind of an eye and reporting to ourselves around those areas, because it's no use to watch it moving without saying by this time at least you must be at this point. But fair enough, I think the committee would have time to reflect on that, and then they will somewhat base their decision, and probably there are somewhat outcomes around that. But thank you very much from yourself for being available to provide us with this kind of report and the advice your colleagues that we appreciate the quality instance of the report, but would have loved that they would have somewhat been part
of this delegation. But thank you very much. You can feel free to leave at any stage. Are there any questions on the presentation by the Director General? One, two hands, three hands, four hands. Number one, who?
My hand was raised first, not because I'm a lady.
In
this male choir that we are sitting. Thank you very much, Chair. I would really like to welcome the presentations, both by the Audit Committee as well as the AG, presented by the DHE. And we want to commend, Chair, we often have a tendency of criticizing and just stressing when there are problems, and then we are being seen as just almost like opposition to the entities, Chapter 9 institutions. But we often fail to give credit where it's due. And I think we need to acknowledge that there's a sterling job that's been done by the AG's office. And amid all the challenges that we find ourselves in the public domain, and even in the economic situation that we find ourselves in, including all the other issues that may pose threats and risks to the entity or the institution, amidst all that, they are performing excellently. And I also want to commend them, Chair, in terms of the excellent BBBE status that they are having and the continuous improvement in terms of that. It shows that you are leading by example. So we really value that. So I have some minor issues that I want to deal with, Chairperson. Firstly, I'm a bit worried in terms of the audit quality, even though we've had the explanation also on why and how best, but I think we need to be cautioned in terms of not further deteriorating that state of affairs. So we need to check from you on what measures do you have in place, or maybe advices to the public out there, entities as well as departments, in assisting you, but also us as a committee, in assisting you to perform your duties and to limit or mediate in terms of this audit quality status that you are currently having, because I'm afraid, Chairperson, that we might get into a situation where the credibility of this institution is at stake, and we don't want it to be tainted. Then, Chairperson, when I look at the debt situation, it's been dealt with in terms of other committee members, but I have a specific concern in terms of the increment of the debt by almost 200 or more, 200 million or more in terms of outstanding debts, and that's a big point of concern, but specifically in terms of the new phenomenon or the new problem that I see is arising in terms of public entities and agencies, SOEs, that's also owing now audit fees. And I need some clarification on what's happening there, because I need to abreast myself whether this is a by-the-way thing and what is leading to that, so that we can curb it whilst it's on the rise, but also to check whether this might be a deliberate attempt to undermine that institution. So we really need to have some insight in terms of that. Then, Chairperson, I formally also want to echo the sentiments raised by my previous colleague in terms of the request that has been made in terms of the to the approvement or the reappointment of the external auditor being Crowe, and taking or acknowledging the efforts that they've made to improve their BE status, and also their commitment that they've made in terms of further improving their status. But also I want to emphasize that they need to abreast us more regularly in terms of how far they are in improving their status, so that we don't commend them or approve now their reappointment, and then for 3 years, and after that we have a problem. They have the contract now, and then they just relaxing, or they're just stagnant. We want to see improvement in terms of that. So I'll pause there, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Number two.
thank you, Chairperson. Let me also echo in terms of accepting the report. On a lighter note, AG, I'm not sure whether you were part of my first interaction with this animal called the Standing Committee on AG. My first question to AG was, who then audits the Auditor General? I found it controversial then, but my colleagues with time, were able to say this is reality. But I think today, we are at least now, on par. The second one, AJ, would be on a serious note now, jokes aside. It cannot be that appropriations chair be a standing committee only looking at bailouts. It cannot be. It cannot be that those institutions who are doing well cannot be assisted just because they are doing well. I want to challenge you, DHG, put this in writing, and I think the timing is correct. The timing, Chair, is correct. We have just now almost done with the special appropriations, and we're going to start now focusing on the budget going towards February. So, one way of doing it would be to go parallel whilst engaging the National Treasury. You also write to the chairperson of the Standing Committee on Appropriations with all the motivations so that we feel the best. This goes, Chair, with this surplus. I'm happy, Chair, that the reasoning behind the surplus, has been outlined, particularly on the cost containment measures. This is what we always encourage other institutions, that spending should be informed. You don't have to spend even if there is no need to spend. Cut where you have to cut. And now we see the fruits from AG. Now, why not then, Chair, in the form of encouraging AG? This one of taking the money back to the kitty of the National Treasury. Let's put it aside. Why not work such that you benefit from what you have actually done? I've got two things in mind, Chair. One would be exactly what you said, DG.
capacity building on your part, doing more on the work that you were telling us that you are doing. But then you also have these oddities which are in the perpetual red. I'm running short of better words, Chair. Perhaps I should have made a disclaimer that I'm not into auditing. So I may run short of the correct terminology. But then, Chair, remember, DAG, sometime we said we would encourage that you continue with visiting these entities, these auditees, more regularly, say on a quarterly, 6 months basis and all that. You would need financial resources for that. I don't want to say that would be capacity building. I don't want to say that would be training. But it would be support, yes. So you can call it support, that you have to support them. So that at the end of the day, you are able to know the actual causes, as you are saying, whether it's deliberate or it's real challenges. Chair, on the depth also, I said, you know, informally to the chairperson, I think I have to be schooled here. You're talking surplus? And I was like, is it nominal? Is it the actual that you have in the kitty? Where in the surplus do you put the debt? I've said, Chair, I've made a disclaimer. I don't want to become an unqualified accountant here. Let me remain a layman, but I think for the benefit of the committee, we have to be made to understand that at what stage would you have such a huge debt whilst you are also talking surplus? Chair, for now, let me pause. I will... Okay. Very last one, Chair.
DAG. We have been interacting with your fans.
We have become at least friends now.
Yes, we are. You have been saying there has been oddities where the actual audit could not be complete.
You could not conclude the audit for various reasons. You'll remember, LG.
One would need some kind of a reflection. Is there anything or is there any law that prevents yourselves from concluding that particular work? I'm afraid of a situation where it just keeps on being a going concern that we have got this that are outstanding. Thanks, Chair.
Okay. Sir.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the presentation as well from the DAG. I'd just like to make a comment. It doesn't necessarily need an answer at this stage. I think any institution can be very proud if they train so many people, and obviously that's very beneficial to South Africa when you run successful programs like that where you get auditors in there. My question is just that a lot of your revenue is generated by local governments, who are probably the people who at this stage, and I can say this firsthand because I sat on a mayoral committee of a council. It's difficult to find well-qualified CFOs to run those local governments who are the ones who are actually owing you money and failing the audits. And my question to you would just be, it would be very helpful if a lot of the training you do or the internships or whatever form it takes could actually be focused on placing good trained CAs back into local government positions to make sure that the people who you are failing on audits are actually benefiting from this training, which you are using, or which is actually being funded by them as well. So you can see where I'm going with this. And it's just a question, but I think that, you know, you have a track record of training people, and we have a track record of local governments who need well-trained people. So that's my only comment. Thank you.
Okay. Last question.
Yeah, Kialabo, I'm Dulastilo, Dr. Somio. I always tell you that I may weep and I must always sweep.
Okay.
Chairperson, we made a mistake by not starting with apologies, man. There was an apology from Mr. Matafa, who has been booked by the doctor up until tomorrow.
Oh,
please get the secretary
apologies
to note it.
Okay.
Thanks very much, Office of the AG. Two or three things quickly. With regard to your outreach, where you say you meet citizens to brief them about your work, do you only do that through the social media and media briefings, or do you have road shows? The last question will be with regard to the opinions. Do you come across stages where your opinions get contested, and then sometimes you find them being taken to court and so on? Do you have the budget to contest those cases? If not, where do we get money? If yes, it's fine. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Is there any other question? It looks like... okay.
Sure, it's not a question. It's just to... At least I'm happy that I think my question will definitely be covered by the paper that the AG referred to.
Thank you very much, honourable members. I think on the matters which are need some kind of emphasis on ourselves, we appreciate the report, the areas that have been covered. The concern lies on the area of the quality work that you are doing, because you have set yourself into some kind of a form of a standard that you must take, and you have as well set yourself a quantum which you must somewhat appreciate to get closer to. And therefore, the failure to get there might be viewed as a mountain to climb, one way or the other. You have stated the reasons, of course, which one could view them may be consequential to the fact that you are getting into a bigger number of the audits that are getting there, as you have said, the extension of that, and secondly, you look into the area of the skills, the skills base going forward in terms of the takeover of such a new oddities and areas of focus. But our emphasis should be that we really want to work hard to get closer into the target that you have set yourselves, lest we venture into a situation of an eye which would view you as somewhat going a bit down around your own objective. The second area which relates to what the members have said in terms of the debt. Maybe the worrisome area might be whether is there any link between that and the pushback which we're referring to around the questions of contestation. I'm not satisfied, I'm not going to pay, I'm contesting this, I'm not going to pay. How do we look into such as well in terms of the list which could be provided and see how are these debted institutions are performing around their own financial conditions, because only relying on the national fiscus, there might be something which is not necessarily addressed there, you see, which could be behavioral in a way. So there must be some kind of an instance of getting a closer there. There is a matter that the AG spoke to the other time, which as well, not the on the contestation, it's as well on the instance of a behavior which is creeping in, maybe because of the new form in terms of the law, that even starting with the audit or in the audit process itself, there is a high demand based on the violent nature of some of the auditees, but don't want to mount it as if that is the occurrence generally. But there are some of those auditees who behave in a manner that would threaten the actual scope of dealing with the audit, as a matter that we must deal with going forward. How can we at best deal with those things to instill a sense of respect which is due to the Office of the Auditor General in terms of conducting its own work with the diligence that is required. So I think those are the areas that we really would need to look into going forward. Probably you could inform us on those areas, one way or the other. Over to you, Auditor General.
Thank you, Chair. There's a couple of questions here which will require specific commentary. Perhaps let me ask the CFO to deal with the specific issues raised around the debt outstanding, the composition of the surplus, and maybe DAG, if you can just once again tackle the issue of audit quality. The return on investment in respect to the people we train and where they go. I'll deal with the opinions, the outreach, as well as the visibility with auditees and outstanding audits. I'll deal with those ones. Can you tackle those ones first, and then I'll wrap up with the remainder.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you, AJ. Colleagues, I'll tackle the issue of the debt and then the issue of the surplus. Just to take a step back, in year 17-18, our debt was at the level of 650 million against a revenue of 3.2 billion. So the sum I'm going with this. And then in 18-19, the year that we are talking about currently, our debt was at 744 million. Against the revenue of 3.46 billion. So if you look at the debt itself as a percentage of revenue, we talk about an amount of 20% that is owing. So we go out, we invoice our auditees to a tune of 3.46 billion. About less than a quarter of that remains owing. So if you look at the trend over the years, that number is maintained, and that is actually due to the collection efforts that we have embarked upon over the years. I think the Chair of Audit touched on the area of ring fencing. where we normally allow our auditees to sign up catch-up agreements in those areas where they are not able to pay the long outstanding debt. Of course, it is a well-known fact that bulk of this debt is in the local government sphere, and that translates to about 38 to 43% of our debt. Again, how do we mitigate against this risk? We go back, we negotiate with our local government, we then sign up the ring fencing agreement. And then I'm just going to talk about the provision for doubtful debt very briefly, then I'll step off this area of the debt. So if you look at the trend since 2014-15, so what is the provision for doubtful debt? It's a debt that you do not believe you will recover. So that is what it means in simple English. So if you look at that trend over the years now, over the five-year trend, we have moved from a debt that was at risk at the level of 25%, meaning a quarter of our debt in 2014-15 was at risk, and that number has since reduced to about 18%, meaning in our debt of 744 million currently, only 18% is at risk. And that is attributed to all the efforts that we put in place in collection. Yes, debt is a risk, but what I'm trying to then highlight is that we manage this collection risk tightly. And then moving to the area of a surplus, an interesting subject, Chairperson. Yes, we've made a surplus. Of course, what does it mean? It means the audit income that was collected was above our operating expenses by 71 million. Barely. It's very close to a break even. But maybe what I must remind the committee on is that our funding model, which was approved by this committee in 2008-2009, allows us to then utilize that very same surplus to fund our capital expenditure. Maybe that's something we did not reflect on in this committee. So in my mind, this surplus one, so you are quite right, Honorable Chair, either it's sitting in debtors because we have a debt book of 7744, so it's sitting there. Two, we have used a part of it to fund our capital expenditure. What is that? Acquisition of tools to allow auditors to do their work, your laptops, your notebooks, your iPads, and then your computer equipment. That's it, Chair.
Once you dig deep on debt, those who work with money will find excuses to say, by the way, no, it's not excise, but surplus. By the way, you don't have surplus. That money has gone into A, B, C, D. So don't dig deeper. Accept that there is 75 million rand. And what do we do about it? We take it or we leave it with them? Otherwise, they will find every way to explain it, as you are doing.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, AG. On audit quality, I think certainly as an office, we are just as concerned as you are around the need to urgently improve our audit quality for the risk it poses on the reputation of the office, the credibility of the work we do, and the confidence that our stakeholders will have in the outcomes of the work that we've done. And we are taking the necessary action to get back to our high standards around audit quality. We certainly are not taking this lightly at all. I want to assure the committee of that. One of the key things that we are working on critically now is to drive better discipline on the management of the audit process. One of the problems we've found contributing to not just the pressures to complete the audits on time, but audit quality as well, is the tendency of our auditors to allow for multiple adjustments to the financials that have been submitted in the first instance. It helps auditees to get at least an unqualified set of financials, a set of financials that SCOA and other structures are able to rely upon, which is important. But it comes at immense cost, not just in terms of the audit fee, but also in audit quality. And I'm coming to the question that you asked, Honourable Member, about what can auditees and what can oversight do to help us. And the critical thing is to get the auditees to prepare for audits, to use the time that they have from the 31st of March, which is year end, to the 31st of May, which is submission date, to prepare the financials so that what they give us is auditable and is close to what should be final. The only way they can do that is by establishing and sustaining the relevant controls and disciplines internally that will deliver credible financials at the end of the financial year. And that's really across the system. So when we issue our audit outcomes and we talk about the quality of financial statements that have been presented for audit, the risks are what we see manifesting in audit quality, in audit fees, and in timeliness of audits. So that's what I think needs to happen in terms of how auditees prepare financials on an ongoing basis throughout the year, and especially at the year end. How oversight could assist is by keeping this particular issue on the table on a consistent basis. For every accounting officer is required by the PFMA and the MFMA, as is relevant, to maintain a system of internal controls that allows them to prepare credible financial statements throughout the year. And when that system doesn't deliver, it is they, as accounting officers, that need to make sure that they proactively correct it and ensure that the system does indeed prepare those financials or generate those financials. The role of the CFO that reports to the accounting officer needs to be looked at. The role of the internal auditors that support the CFO, the accounting officers, needs to be looked at. Again, the role of the audit committees in terms of their assurance role in that combined assurance process needs to be looked at. So I think oversight could certainly help by focusing on this topic about how the controls that support the preparation of credible financial and performance information are being maintained. The other topic AG asked me to deal with is about the return on investment on the training that we do. The individuals that we train, some of them stay and continue to contribute to the work of the office. But many of them leave, and they go to the public sector, and throughout all spheres, you'll find many of our staff members. And some go to the private sector. The bulk of them end up in the public sector. So, Honourable de Villiers, I do want to assure you, I think he's left, I do want to assure you that that's what happens with many of the people that leave our institution. They go on and do different things, and predominantly in the public sector. Thank you.
So coming back to just a few of those items remaining, particularly on the outreach work. The outreach work is a deliberate plan that we introduced some many years ago when we wanted people to be sensitized to the work that we do. So you'll know that, for example, in the period 2009 to 2012, the South African Audit Office visited every one of those 278 municipalities physically. That's the one thing that we did. I don't know of any other institution that has done it in that context, every single one of the institutions over a three-year period, with a view to alerting them to the fact that what is expected of them is not really for them to be converted into accountants, just for them to be alert to the fact that there's a dam being built under their watch and supervision. And there are financial statements that tell the story about how much it cost to do that dam. Are they aware? Are they monitoring? Are they taking the necessary steps that are required in order to prevent things from escalating into triple of the budget than planned, all of those things. Further, we also knew that there were many people in the country that were interested in this work who are not necessarily employed in these institutions, but are just ordinary citizens. Some of them you'll find in universities, some of them you'll find in business councils, some of them you'll find in all places that you can think of. We meet with them, we engage them, we do it I'm sure if the universities in the country by now, we probably have done 90% almost of universities that we have engaged with. I was in the Free State this week. We've recently done Stellenbosch and quite a number of them over the years. I'm sure the ones that we haven't done haven't yet extended that particular invitation. It's normally in response to that invitation where we also have an opportunity to meet with the students in those universities, among others, because for us it's a direct benefit when we meet students there. And then suddenly once we do, and once we interact with them, and once we engage them on various issues, suddenly they wake up to the fact that there is indeed an institution like this in the country. Whereas we were relying on urban legend, those guys that wear brown shoes and safaris, that type of stuff, you know. Yeah, I, when I was a university student, I used to have that impression of the office of the Auditor General. But they see us, and then they see us do different things, and, you know, dancing among them, and also speaking the same technical language. And, you know, sharing the same technical language with them. As a result, the direct benefit of that, we don't really have to spend that much money advertising for employment opportunities as well as for articles, because then they naturally connect with us, whether it's Fort Hare, whether it's any one of them. They just connect with us, which means that strategically the cost of recruitment goes down, because your visibility makes it possible for them to know that that office is capable of producing so many CAs. Surely let me try, you know, because some people were telling them that, well, when you go there, all you're going to deal with is just irregular expenditure and fruitless and wasteful expenditure and nothing more. But if you look at the list of public entities that we audit, many of us speak too much, but we don't really go to the audit site to go see exactly the debits and the credits. They do. So there's a direct benefit also, honorable members, there as far as this outreach is concerned. And I think we've even gone to the likes of banks. Banks have invited us, including the South African Banking Council at some point, as many others, where we said after we engage with them, okay, we are now taking over some of the complex state-owned companies, and let us try and latch onto the technical knowledge of the bank and say, bank, please, can you help us train our people? Because normally in government there are no banks whereby you can have the knowledge to be able to audit the TBSA, to be able to audit PIC, to be able to audit all sorts of public entities that have got financial instruments that are quite risky for the economy. So by going to speak to them about the audit office, and then they wake up to the fact that, oh, okay, you guys also do this kind of work. But what it also does, it enables us to partner with them and say, can we take 15 of our people and run a course on the introduction of banking? So that when they come home to do that audit work with the banking institutions in the public sector, they've already got some insight and knowledge. They grow as a people in terms of their own knowledge, but we also benefit because we've got access to that knowledge directly. So we've used these partnering arrangements with a view to having a win-win situation, and I think it has helped us in many ways. So then the other part of the outreach is obviously the formal engagement on television, on radio. When we release our audit outcomes, we try to make sure that, you know, the ordinary people have a clear understanding of what's going on. That's why sometimes you find when there are elections, people go to these town hall meetings, especially for local government, carrying the general report. Something I think that they've never done, many citizens in various parts of the country. I've listened to them personally on TV. Someone goes to the general report of the Free State and go to page number this, and put people like yourselves in your profession on the spot when it comes to having to answer to those matters. To us, that is the value that is also driven by actually doing what? Empowering other stakeholders with the knowledge that will facilitate their oversight over their elected representatives. So, Chair, as far as that space is concerned, it's a continuing space. Surely we don't call community meetings because we can get into trouble sometimes because people will go there with other things in mind. Yeah. But at least we try and stick to the constitutional institutions and other formal institutions in the country where we know that the conversation is going to be lifted to a different level. some academics and some students in the context of this work have already signed up to do research work as master's topics on the kind of work that happens through this audit institution. So one can easily say that with all of that visibility, which is the second goal that we have signed up to, we venture into many areas in the country, including private and public sector, to spread the message. And then on the issue of the opinions and the contestation of opinions, you know, people do sometimes believe that they are better than what you think in all manner of ways. And then when they have taken that view, then they start, and of course our view is not to say that they are not better. We are just pointing to matters that are likely to cause them problems when it comes to achieving their objectives. Some don't take it that way because they've got a different view as to what the audit is meant to achieve. There are extremes. There are those that think that you are giving them this opinion because you are on the same side as their enemies. Sometimes you don't even know their friends, let alone their enemies, you know. And you don't go into an audit with that objective. The objective is to alert you to the fact that here are the risks in your path that are likely to trip you towards achievement of your objectives. And we stay that course as much as we can. So contestations come, and then obviously we've got to be diplomatic in engaging them so that we don't also go head to head, because it can be quite pricey when you have to go to court on some of these things, you know. But the reality is that we are cautioning you that these are the risks. It's not perfect science, but take caution, because once you don't, you're going to find yourself in a slippery path. And it's not good for us to go back and say, we told you so. But I think there are many that we can actually say so to, having ignored our caution, and then now they are in a serious financial risk, including disclaimers. But we don't like saying we told you so, because that's not how we operate. We're not vindictive. We're trying to enhance the capacity of the institutions to do what they need to do. So the contestations then, Chair, we will take them as they come, because they are part of the natural engagement in an audit. It's only when they start getting beyond the normal contestation that we will also continue to alert you to say, but this one is no longer contesting now, he's trying to get into a boxing ring. Those instances, I think we will obviously let you know of them, as well as maybe the issue of the outstanding audits. We made mention of it this week when we presented our audit outcomes at the Public Enterprises Committee, that sometimes it is good to be on track with regards to the accountability cycle, which is the audit must sign off the accounts of this year within the prescribed period, so that everybody who has an interest in the outcomes of that institution has got this fresh knowledge about it, which is current, so that you don't allow that institution to delay the finalization of its accounts to a point where it becomes year number two, year number three. Because it's going to be difficult for the system from an accountability and oversight cycle point of view to make sense of 2018 things in 2022. Because the years have moved, things have changed, the people that were there are no longer there. The institutional knowledge, including the knowledge of the people on our side, might have also moved, because, you know, these are humans, they decide sometimes where they want to be next year. So I think the reality is that we don't want to enter into a period where there's absolutely no accountability, you know. And we've pointed out in regards to many of these that are moving in this direction. And we think that ours is largely to try and persuade the boards or the management of the entity to submit their accounts. Because if you look at the legislation, it doesn't give us any powers to do any more than just report the fact that they didn't. But we don't have the power to enforce them to submit financial statements, because they own the financial statements. That's why the report says these financial statements belong to the entity. So it's always best that you give them the chance and the space to write the books and tell the story about what they did in the best way they understand, so that they can take accountability. And we think that that is fair enough to be expected of any board or of any leadership of an institution. Some do not want to get the story told through the financial statements, Chair, because they know that they are at a financial health risk, there is a going concern risk, they wish that it can be fixed so that by the time they finalize their accounts, and I think it's a fair expectation of them as well. So some of the delays are of that nature, which then require the auditor to also be reasonable, because clearly it will be a case of, if I tell this story the way it is now, all the people that have lent me money might pull the plug, in essence, and then it will disrupt so many things. Whereas if you gave them a little bit of chance to do that which they are supposed to do. For example, appropriation is supposed to be finalizing its debate on matters of that nature, and it's a matter of time before it finds expression in the right decision-making levels. That could be the timing of the delay, in essence. Sometimes it's not a delay of too many months and all of that. But it's an area to be watched, Chair, because, for example, with SAA, you haven't got the accounts for 2018 and 2019 already. It's a huge entity. And for one to be two years down the path, it means that there's a lot of memory that needs to be caught up with, especially for entities that size. So those are the major ones I picked up, Chair. And of course, we take a note of some of the sentiments that the members of the committee have shared with us and made us smile tactically, just for the fact that you encouraging all of us, including our teams, to continue to do the work for the country, because you don't take this lightly. It's a responsibility that weighs on us in many ways, because there are also risks in the environment for our staff as well as for the country. So we really take that feedback openly, and we embrace it, and we shall also try to make sure that we don't become the headlines. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much, AG and the team, colleagues. Around the point of appreciation of the report by the Auditor General, but it is clear that in whatever committee we serve in, if these kinds of challenges persist, we need to somewhat deal with them. That was as reported, we should not take it lightly that the number of finished audits has dropped, and the causes of such drop, and as well looking into the nature of high involvement of consultants in drafting financial statements, which at times those financial statements are not of a quality. It poses another risk area for both auditees and as well the Auditor General. Both financially and otherwise. So it really needs some form of indulgence at that point. Already we have seen that on the 13 municipalities which had a consistent bad performance over years, which through various committees have dealt with, that a totality of them would involve consultants. A totality of them would produce inadequate financials. A totality of them would receive bad feedback, which is as a result of the input in as far as those financials are concerned. So it's a huge area that we must continuously have a pulse on, and it's a risk to yourselves that was a number speak. You see, in terms of your quality aspect, if that is impacted negatively, we must state it upfront that what gets in is what gets out. But you see, so it impacts on your quality. If that what is getting in is not of a standard that is required, and there is a stop gap here and there, like stop and go, you have problems. So you need indeed to somewhat be hard and fast on your auditees around those matters, because they would make you to reflect somewhat badly. Because if we are there to protect, as we have to do, the integrity of this office, we must be backed by the critical aspects of such outcomes, something which we must continue to derive. And we're happy to say, AG, that the report gives us an indication of a good scope of work, which is the outcome of the work that you somewhat deal with. We are still going to reflect on the report and finalize it, and we'll give you a feedback on some of the critical aspects of your report. But otherwise, we are happy about the work that goes through the office, and we are committed to provide that necessary support as this committee to see your work to the fruitful levels. More so when you have informed us this is the penultimate in terms of your report. Of course, you wouldn't want to see your legacy hanging in a way which is not your track. You see, so we must assist you to get there, so our ears and eyes will be able to do so. Thank you very much to yourself and the team. Continue to do this kind of good work, and they will somewhat be there around other areas which are related to advising necessary committees of the National Assembly on some aspects that require such, and other matters would be referred, as we were saying, to the Assembly for reflection, like areas of funding which are necessary, we are somewhat pleased with the prudent nature of management of those financials. Honorable Mlenza, have we not met your standard?
No.
So you are happy, you can now run.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, the meeting adjourns.